I am life, you've been waiting for your chance.
After yesterday's outrage and having the audacity to question the sacred Trinity doctrine, for penance I watched 8 hours worth of Pat Robertson tapes, and now I am converted back to believing the pagan Trinity. In fact, I now believe in the Easter Bunny and Santa Claus as well. So I fully recovered from my heresy. I flogged myself several times, and I will not ever dare to question the sacred pillar of corporate steepled religions. We will be returning to that subject at a future time. So, in fact, I think next month, probably the second, third week of next month, I'll be dedicating probably a few shows to that. I really need to go into detail on it because it's obviously very controversial. And to drop a bomb like that, I need to back up what I say so that people will see that I'm not intellectually dishonest. And, you know, that I do back up what I say, and I don't respond when people ask me questions by saying, I don't need to. You've got to be kidding me. I was called intellectually dishonest, yet I was quoting passages to support my position when I asked a caller yesterday to give me just one passage to back her position. I was called intellectually dishonest, and then she refused to give me such a passage by responding with the statement, I don't need to. Well, who do you think was being intellectually dishonest there? I'll let you decide. If that caller is in fact listening, wait until I address the subject again. Please don't be calling today on that because we're going to be going off on a different topic. Got a guest today, Chris Dunn, author of another Adventures Unlimited book called The Giza Power Plant. Pretty interesting. Another alternative perspective on the Great Pyramids, the Great Pyramid conglomerate at the Giza site in Egypt, and talking about advanced technology in the distant past, and pretty interesting stuff. There's a lot more to that pyramid than what meets the eye. In fact, I'm going to be doing a whole show on that. I'm working on it right now, in fact. Just all kinds of mysteries surrounding that pyramid, the measurements of it. We'll probably maybe be touching on some of that today. But focusing specifically on that structure being used as a power plant, power energy generating plant. Might sound crazy at first, but when you start looking into it, there's a lot of, well, let me put it this way, man today isn't quite so smart as he would like you to think. And man in ancient times wasn't so dumb as modern man would like you to think. At best, it's intellectual chauvinism. At worst, it's an attempt to try to cover up the fact that ancient man was probably more advanced than modern man. They don't want you to know that for several reasons. One of them has to do simply with their little academic dogma of evolution. Man couldn't have been so smart in ancient times, or else you wouldn't have this idea of man evolving. Of course, we know the ancient Greeks were highly advanced, and then we went into the Dark Ages. That's not evolution, that's devolution. Anyways, stick with us, guys. We'll be right back with Christopher Dunn.
Hi, this is Brother Michael Diamond from Most Holy Family Monastery. We are now offering a critically important $10 package. The package contains three DVDs with 10 different programs, our new 658-page book, called The Truth About What Really Happened to the Catholic Church After Vatican II, which is the most comprehensive book ever produced on what has happened to the Catholic Church in the last 50 years. You also get another 335-page book and other material. Order now at our website, mostholyfamilymonastery.com. The last word monastery is spelled M-O-N-A-S-T-E-R-Y. At the website, you can watch all of our videos for free, read sample chapters of the new book and other articles, or call us 24 hours a day at 1-800-275-1126. That's 1-800-275-1126. Or you can mail in your order to us at Most Holy Family Monastery, 4425 Schneider Road, Fillmore, New York, 14735. The price of the whole package is $10, which includes media mail shipping, $15 for UPS Ground, or $30 outside the U.S. MostHolyFamilyMonastery.com.
Come on, Bill. 2 weeks ago, you were riding a bicycle. And today, you're showing up in your new car and telling me you're buying a house? What did you do, rob Bill Gates?
No, John, I didn't rob Bill Gates. What I did do is visit the website www.didyourobbillgates.com. That's where I learned how to make $3,000 to $9,000 each and every week, starting with my very first week. It's a simple program that does all the work for you. I'm already up to $25,000 just going on my third week.
Whoa. What was that website again?
It's www.didyourobbillgates.com. Now write this down, John. You should go there and learn how this program can help you become financially independent, too.
Thanks, Bill.
I'm going there right now. Check, please.
You got this one, right, Bill?
Sure, John. Don't forget, it's www.didyourobbillgates.com. Next time, you'll be buying me lunch.
Deal.
There is one and only one national populist news weekly, staffed by an unsurpassed team of veteran investigative journalists who have dared to rip the veil of deception from the cover-up stories promoted by the big money-controlled media monopoly.
American Free Press.
AFP's no-holds-barred journalists fearlessly seek the truth, no matter how controversial the issue. AFP publishes exciting, in-depth, uncensored news and information good patriotic Americans need to know to combat the coming police state being clamped in our republic. The American Free Press is your voice. Subscribe today and catch up on the real news. Mention RBN when you call and receive a one-year subscription, plus a copy of Michael Collins Piper's latest bestseller, The High Priests of War. All that for just $49? Call AFP toll-free, 888-699-NEWS, or visit AmericanFreePress.net.
Welcome back to True Threats Radio. Host Giles Giuliani. We're going to have our guest Chris Dunn here in just a second. Just want to remind you, if anyone's interested in getting the Aaron Russo DVD, Freedom of Fascism, excellent way to wake people up to what's going on in this country, this downward trend toward dictatorship. You can get that from RBN for $19.95 plus $4.95 shipping and handling, by calling 800-724-2719. You can also go to republicbroadcasting.org and order through PayPal. Or you can send your check or money order to the RBN office here at 2251 Double Creek Boulevard, number 302, in Round Rock, Texas, 78664. If anyone is interested in reading my books, Piercing the Fog of 9/11, The New World Disorder, or any of my religious rants from back in my theology major days, particularly the book on the Trinity, which we discussed yesterday. The name of that book is Who is God? You can get any of those at lulu.com. That's L-U-L-U.com. And you can find them by searching for my name, Charles Giuliani. That's G-I-U-L-I-A-N-I. And if you think I'm a heretic for questioning the sacred triune God concept, go read my book, and then I dare you to try to prove me wrong. You will find out the ugly truth that you've been lied to, and I guarantee you will not be able, unless you desire to live in a fantasy world, of course, you will not be able to question that dogma anymore. And maybe you'll stop believing in the Easter Bunny and Santa Claus, too. I don't know. Anyway, with no further ado, let's go to our guest, Chris Dunn. He wrote a book called The Giza Power Plant, available at Adventures Unlimited. Really interesting book. Although I must admit, I haven't read the whole thing. I just kind of skimmed through it. I haven't had time yet. I just got my copy about a week ago. I've been so busy with so many things here. But it is on my to-do list to sit down and carefully pore over it. So this will be new to me as well as to many of the listeners. But I am somewhat familiar with it. I've looked into a little bit of this in the past. And anyway, with no further ado, let's bring up our guest, Mr. Dunn. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Charles. I appreciate being here.
Yeah. I've always been fascinated. Of course, I've read many of David Hatcher Childress's books, which deal with similar subjects. So I'm a big fan of ancient advanced technology. In fact, the evidence for that is pretty overwhelming. You don't have to look too far.
It is overwhelming.
Yeah. I mean, it. You know, every culture at one point or other had developed pretty incredible technology. I don't know, you know, if we're going to be going into this at all, but you look at the ancient, Vedic texts, Mahabharata, for example, talks about Vimana aircraft. There's no question. Every ancient culture, the Chinese had developed flying craft. I'll be talking more about this on future shows, but you can't write this stuff off as wild imagination because it goes into way too much detail that obviously indicates a knowledge of even atomic warfare.
Yeah, the Mahabharata refers to mushroom clouds in specific detail and also the effects of tremendous heat and radiation.
Radiation poisoning.
People, elephants, and things of that nature, whole armies being being devastated by a fire with the brilliance of 10,000 suns. So there's a lot of reference to high technology in prehistory that is generally given a short shrift by most academics because they, except I think in India, they accept it as just a part of their history. But the Western world has not quite reached that point yet.
Well,
and recognizing the abilities of the ancients.
So, well, I'll tell you what, Chris, we're not going to let ourselves get hemmed in by their constricting boundaries. We're going to let our minds soar today and realize that, the stuff they teach us is pretty much stagnant waste.
Well, it does seem that in terms of looking into history and trying to piece together a lot of real anomalies that have caused lay people or those like you and I who are not, and your listeners who are not constrained by particular, tenure or at least to try and toe the party line. We can let our minds actually stretch a little bit and try to come up with answers to questions that have not really been addressed adequately. And when they have been addressed, they've been addressed by people who really are lacking in skills or qualifications to determine what the true answers are. And this is not really a knock against academia because obviously if you're studying history or you're studying archaeology or Egyptology, you're not going to, you may not have any experience in manufacturing, or you may not be able to recognize when something has been manufactured by a machine rather than being manufactured by hand. And so, and there may be certain features about an artifact that would escape you. And so historically what has happened is that they have identified these artifacts, and they have claimed them to be the result of laborious work where using slaves or not slaves, using primitive methods like copper chisels and stone hammers and things of that
right.
nature. which
a
is...
A good example of this is the Baghdad Battery. They thought it was just a clay pot, and it sat there for a while. If you're not looking for something, you're not going to see it, you know. They're not looking for advanced technology, so they didn't notice it, but it turned out that it was a battery. And, yes. In fact, they found several of them. But here's another point I want to bring up with that, too. Even though they now acknowledge, they admit that, yes, this was, the Babylonians did have batteries, at least 500 B.C., but they still credit Volta as the inventor of the battery in the 18th century.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like Columbus. We now know the Vikings. There's nobody questions anymore that the Vikings reached Newfoundland 500 years before Columbus, yet Columbus is still credited as the discoverer of America. It's unbelievable. They just don't want to change the textbooks and teach correctly.
That is correct. And I think it's probably because they don't believe it. And what happens is they get set in stone with particular ideas, and it's not just academia, but a lot of society is that way. People don't like to change. They learn something, they don't want to learn something new. And it's very, very slow to change people's minds about a particular part of our history.
Especially religion, but yeah.
Well, you know, that's the thing. That's the thing, Charles. I'm glad you brought that up, because when you get into, I mean, for myself, I look at these things from a engineer's perspective, and really, it, without any consideration for religion or anything like that. But I run into the you know, the mindset, a religious mindset, where people, you know, are arguing from not from evidence but from belief, and that is what beggars my belief, is that you actually have serious scholars who prefer to believe stories passed down through history that may be inaccurate, as opposed to very hard evidence that is carved into igneous rock and to an engineer or a craftsman is obvious de facto evidence of high technology. I find, though, that I don't really spend that much time railing against, or you know, it's not a situation that I agonize over. There are better things to do. I go out and look for more evidence and try and present more evidence to support the case, and that's what I find. Evidence is everywhere. I mean, South America, Egypt, from Cairo to Luxor, the evidence is quite clear.
Yeah, it's sad. You know, science wants to demystify everything and make it seem like they've got all the answers and it's already been figured out, been there, done that. But that's not the case at all. You know, the ancients were far more complex and downright mysterious.
I think it's mysterious to us, and they were certainly complex. And I think it's as mysterious to us as if you're not familiar with how a thing is made, then it becomes mysterious.
Right.
In other words, what goes on inside a manufacturing plant, say you're manufacturing cell phones or automobiles or any other products for society, the product that we pick off the shelf or off the showroom floor is not mysterious to us, because we're familiar with that. But what goes on behind the making of it is mysterious to most people, because they have not had any vision or any training or into the plants that actually turn them out.
Electronics, and I know I don't.
Well, okay. I do, so I feel, you know, fortunate in that respect.
Right. Okay, I'm going to go to a short break. Stick with us, folks. We'll be right back with Chris Dunn. Very interesting stuff.
Catholic. Catholic priest calls for Christians to resist unjust war. It is an established historical fact that the Vatican has publicly stated that the Iraqi war is an unjust war. However, it miserably failed to tell its Catholic soldiers that it is a mortal sin to attack Iraq. The Protestant ministers in unison should take the logical step of telling their soldiers that it is a serious offense against God to participate in this unjust war. However, if enough Protestant ministers do not take this logical step, then the lay Catholics and Protestants have a serious obligation to demand of their clergy to take this logical step publicly. Personally, I am doing all that I can to stop the continuation of the murder, carnage, and suffering that is being committed against the innocent people of Iraq in this terrible, unjust war. For additional facts regarding this grave matter, order the lecture by Father John Martinez entitled WW3 Can Still Be Prevented. Just go to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click on our web banner for more information and ordering.
I found this company online and they had this really unique variety of salt wellness products. I read some of the articles and ended up ordering this beautiful salt lamp. According to the company, they said that the salt crystal lamps gently purify indoor air. I was so amazed. I put it in the baby's room and it made a perfect nightlight. Both my husband and I could tell the difference.
SoleWellness.com is a unique company that offers salt wellness products from around the world.
So I went back to the site and ordered their Soleil Simple Natural Cleaning Products, also made with Himalayan salt. I figured it would clean really well. The natural cleaning products worked wonderfully and there was no scent. This company has so many products my whole family can enjoy and feel better with. Plus, the service was great.
If you're interested in natural, homeopathic, time-tested remedies, visit SoleilWellness.com. That's S-O-L-A-Y Wellness.com or call 312-224-2710, 312-224-2710.
Attention gardeners, if you've ever wanted to grow the absolute best tasting fruits and vegetables imaginable, well, here's exciting news. There's a new product called ProtoGrow and it's dynamite in the garden. ProtoGrow is a bioactive superfood for plants. It works by providing true broad spectrum nutrition, allowing plants to achieve their full genetic expression. So what does this mean in the garden? It means mouth-watering fruits and vegetables, brilliantly colored flowers, herbs that finally grow to medicinal strength, blue ribbon garden produce jam-packed with bioavailable minerals and trace elements, giant pumpkins, even high-potency Hybrix wheatgrass. ProtoGrow is a proprietary blend of full-spectrum nutrients from the sea. It literally contains the basic building blocks of life itself. In fact, ProtoGrow is so effective at producing rapid plant growth in record time that it almost forces plants to grow even under the worst light and soil conditions. To grow tasty fruits and vegetables right now, go to growlikecrazy.com or call 877-327-0365.
Welcome back to Two Thirds Radio. It's your host, Charlie Giuliani. We've got Chris Dunn on the line talking about advanced technology and all around the world, but particularly ancient Egypt. So, yeah, let's jump into the Great Pyramid here. Before we even talk about how it, you know, its usage as part of a power plant. By the way, are you proposing that it was part of a global network of power distribution, or do you see it as just a local?
I would say that it was a part of a system, but more local than global. The pyramids around around Cairo in Egypt would be a part of the system. And that's what I say. I mean, if somebody would argue that it may have a connection with other sites around the world, and I wouldn't argue with them. But in terms of my research, it's pretty much focused on the pyramids in Egypt and
locally. Yeah.
Locally, yeah.
Well, before we even delve into that, let's talk a little about what do you say to those who have written them off as just a burial place for a king. That's all it was, nothing more. You know, what the evidence that it was not even, perhaps not even a burial place at all. It wasn't a tomb at all.
Yes, I mean, what I say is that they're wrong, that it was not a tomb. There hasn't been any evidence produced to prove that it was a tomb. There have been no mummies and no original burials found in any pyramids in Egypt. And when you start getting into looking at the evidence that is there, the tomb theory just simply doesn't make any sense at all. It has no features that one would logically associate with a tomb.
In fact, the only pyramid tomb we know of is Pakal in Mexico.
Yes, and even that, I mean, when you have a structure and you find a body in it, it does not necessarily mean that the structure was originally built to house the body.
Right.
You know, I mean, you've had people buried in their cars, and because they, you know, I think I read somewhere where this one socialite was buried in a Porsche because she loved that Porsche so much. But obviously, the Porsche was not built to be a tomb, but it was certainly used as one, and that's an extreme
good
example.
Point.
But you don't build tombs that look like the pyramid looks like. Maybe on the outside you might say, okay, it's a pyramid shape, and that was a cultural thing. But when you get into the inside of these pyramids and you begin to look at the engineering and the architecture on the inside, it argues pretty forcefully against any idea that burials took place there, or that's what it was originally built for. And I mean, just, I know that they say you cannot impose a Western mindset or on it, the ancients, but logically, if you're taking the resources of a nation to build something like the Great Pyramid, I don't think any intelligent people would actually support a structure like this being built to house one body. The cost associated with building something like that would have been billions and billions of dollars in today's dollars. And the resources are just enormous. I mean, you're looking at a structure that covers 13 acres and has 2.5 million blocks of stone and also granite brought down from Aswan 500 miles away that weighs up to 70 tons per block. And organized and placed in a way that creates a precision structure that is within 2 minutes of a degree on the angle of the pyramid and 3 minutes of a degree in alignment of the pyramid. There are features in the Great Pyramid that when you take everything into consideration, including the theory of how long it was taken to build, the features are actually pose some really difficult questions to answer. And
yeah, the height is proportional to the base, and it's an exact, precise fraction of measurement of the Earth's circumference and
right, exactly.
And why would you go through all that trouble?
I mean, there is definitely a body of knowledge, even if you don't have a theory for what the pyramid was. And let's say that there's no theory about the pyramid, no tomb theory, no power plant or whatever theory about the Great Pyramid. And you're looking at this structure and trying to determine what it was. There's a lot of stuff that you're going to have difficulty finding answers for. And one of them is, or even if you say, okay, I'm going to duplicate this using today's technology, there are some impossible feats that we find.
Yeah, they'd like us to think that they could do it, and it was simple. They have not done it because they can't do it.
They didn't have a good reason to. I mean,
tell you what, we're going to go to a quick break. Hold that thought. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
there is one and only one national populist news weekly, staffed by an unsurpassed team of veteran investigative journalists who have dared to rip the veil of deception from the cover-up stories promoted by the big money-controlled media monopoly.
American Free Press.
AFP's no-holds-barred journalists fearlessly seek the truth, no matter how controversial the issue. AFP publishes exciting, in-depth, uncensored news and information good patriotic Americans need to know to combat the coming police state being clamped in our republic. The American Free Press is your voice. Subscribe today and catch up on the real news. Mention RBN when you call and receive a one-year subscription, plus a copy of Michael Collins Piper's latest bestseller, The High Priests of War. All that for just $49? Call AFP toll-free, 888-699-NEWS, or visit AmericanFreePress.net.
It's true. Gold and silver have been a source of true wealth for years. In fact, people around the world have used these metals to buy and sell goods for over 5,000 years. And gold and silver will continue to be a source of true wealth for the foreseeable future. If you look back in history, you'll see that all fiat currencies have failed to maintain wealth or failed altogether. But gold has always protected its holder, a true asset, usable to anyone around the globe. As the value of your Federal Reserve note continues to depreciate, gold will be your only insurance. As an example, in 1975, you could buy a $40,000 home with 1,000 gold coins. Today, that same house is $400,000, yet you can still buy it with 1,000 gold coins. To find out more information on how to protect your wealth, call Republic Trading at 1-800-691-7898. That's 1-800-691-7898.
Hi, this is Lance Keltner, and I firmly support Ron Paul as next president of the United States. That's why myself and New Disaster will be rocking San Antonio in support of Ron. It's going to be a great day of music. Don't miss it.
Congressman Ron Paul, champion of the Constitution, is coming to San Antonio July 28th. Come hear him talk about defending liberty at the Buckhorn Museum. The fundraiser starts at 6 p.m. For tickets, call toll-free 866-RON-2008. That's 866-RON-2008.
Hi, I'm David White of the Glorious Dregs, and I support Ron Paul for president in 2008. Please join us when the Ron Paul Revolution sweeps through San Antonio on Saturday, July 28th.
Congressman Ron Paul, champion of the Constitution, is coming to San Antonio July 28th. Come hear him talk about defending liberty at the Buckhorn Museum. The fundraiser starts at 6 p.m. For tickets, call toll-free 866-RON-2008. That's 866-RON-2008.
Welcome back to Truth Hurts Radio. It's your host, Charlie Giuliani. We've got Chris Dunn on the line here as our guest. So, the claim that, you know, they know how they built the pyramids and that they could do it today, and it's really a whole lot of hogwash, isn't it? It's kind of like the giant statues of Ramses when they were building the Aswan Dam. They couldn't budge them. They had to cut them into sections to move the statues.
Oh, yes, yes. The I don't think we have not really demonstrated that we understand how the pyramids were built or the marvelous statues that you find at Aswan, that you find at Luxor, and they are just incredible. That's a new area of research that I took up in 2004 is actually studying the Ramses statues at Luxor. And there are features associated with these statues that are absolutely incredible. That, you know, will be a part of my next book coming out. But the pyramids themselves, there have been attempts to demonstrate how pyramids were built, and the efforts fall woefully short at the mark because the they may be able to move small blocks a short distance, but when it gets when you get up to the large tonnage, there are some 200 ton blocks on the Giza Plateau. In the Great Pyramid, we know that the granite beams above the King's Chamber, so-called King's Chamber, weigh up to 70 tons. And so, you know, the efforts that have been put forth by academia or documentary makers or even a Japanese team in the 60s tried to build a pyramid and had to use front-end loaders and you know, basically had to resort to modern equipment because they couldn't do it using the tools that are found in the archaeological record from that period. So it's a huge puzzle for them. But
and not only did they move these huge stones, but great distances and great heights they had to lift them to.
But one of the things,
and with precision. I mean, these things were.
Well, now you're hooking into what I was just going to start talking about.
Yeah.
And that is my background has been in manufacturing and it's been in precision, and I've been in manufacturing now for about 46 years, and I have spent thousands of hours working with my hands on machines, and then working in engineering, and currently for the last 10 years in management. But for 46 years, I come to understand how things are made and why they're made, and what can be accomplished by hand and what can be accomplished by a machine. And when I go to Egypt and I look around and I study closely some of the artifacts that you find in Egypt, my conclusion is that they had to have been done by machine. And they had to have had certain metrology equipment that is not in the archaeological record. And if your listeners want to go to my website, it's GizaPower.com. There are some articles there. One is called The Precision of the Ancient Egyptians. And by clicking on that link, they can read about some of the boxes at the Serapeum, about 10 miles south of Cairo, where there are these huge granite boxes and down inside these rock tunnels. They were brought down and finished off underground, and they have a precision of about 2/10,000ths of an inch, and they are perfectly square with a modern toolmaker square that is accurate to within 50 millionths, and they 50 millionths of an inch, that is. And they have a finish that's absolutely incredible. And they weigh 70 tons. The lids weigh 25 tons. And there's over 20 of them down inside these rock tunnels. So here you have evidence that totally and completely argues against the theory of these the Egyptians using stone balls or stone hammers and copper chisels, or rubbing something with an abrasive and a harder material. They're just impossibilities. And so the arguments, I mean, the evidence is there, but unfortunately, it's not changed. The history books are not being rewritten yet.
Yeah, it's that case in every field of study, isn't it? Each one has their biases, and they're not going to change.
Well, I mean, and it's really, I think when you say, I mean, we've been studying the Great Pyramid for many years. Petrie studied it back in the 1800s. He's an Egyptologist from England who went over there in the 1880s and did a lot of detailed study of the Giza Plateau and also studying certain artifacts. And the precision that he found in the Great Pyramid is quite remarkable. I mean, we don't require that kind of precision today to create a structure like that, a building. That precision, though, is required if you're building something that is a functional device or it has a technological purpose rather than a building for people gathering or people, or a burial tomb or anything, any kind of temple, mosque, or church, or whatever. So it's you're talking about fit and finish on blocks that are within 5/1000ths of an inch, or you can barely put a cigarette paper in between the cracks in the limestone walls in the Queen's Chamber, or the granite walls in the King's Chamber. The alignment of one shaft, or at least the one shaft that was quite incredibly aligned, is the descending passage from the opening to the bedrock was within 20,000ths of an inch. That's the thickness of a thumbnail. And also, constructing or excavating out the limestone through the bedrock down to the subterranean chamber, the shaft is only out one quarter of an inch from over 350 feet. And over 150 feet, it's within 20,000ths of an inch. So, I mean, there is they certainly had instruments and technologies that were much more advanced than simple.
Yeah, I mean, you don't just whack with a hammer in the quarry and pull out a chunk of rock and you know.
Right. And
there's astonishing precision here.
And that's another thing. I mean, we're talking about not just the precision, which is significant, but also there are certain constraints associated with any kind of manufacturing process. And the constraints are limited to the tools that you have and how they affect the materials that you want to work. And so if you're drilling a piece of wood at home with your drill, and you have a piece of pine, the material is going to cut a lot easier than if you're cutting into oak or hickory or some harder wood. And similarly, when you're talking about working with metals, those are relatively soft. They're harder than the wood, but they're relatively soft when you compare it to limestone or granite. And the unfortunate thing is that there's not much metal left from that period of time, but there is a lot of stone and a lot of granite, and a lot of limestone and granite. And the marks of the tools, though, are in the stone and the granite, and you can actually see them, and they are quite significant in terms of what they tell us about the speed with which, or the rate of cutting that the tools actually performed. And there was one artifact that Petrie noted. It was a core that was drilled out of granite, and the central core is just like a tree panning operation, or you can buy tree panning tools or tree panning drills or hole saws, I think they call them in the construction industry for carpentry. But they cut a circle, and then you take the central core out. But this particular core, which is about 4 inches long, it indicated that the feed rate, and that is the depth of cut, as the tool rotates 360 degrees, it advances into the workpiece, and this advanced into granite at a rate of 1/8 of an inch per revolution of the drill, which is a phenomenal feed rate. So you do see evidence like that on the granite, on the rock.
As if they used like diamond or something.
Right. Well, I mean, they were definitely using something that was harder.
Power. Yeah, I see what you're saying, right.
Yeah, they were using something that was harder than the granite. The granite is one of the hardest. I mean, it has a quartz, silicon quartz crystal. So they would be using something harder than that. But anyway, there is that, and there is also the geometry of some of the artifacts. And when we get into looking at the geometry that they cut into granite with precision, and they were replicating particular geometries over large surface areas with precision, it really opens up a whole new area of discussion in terms of...
Well, you know what's amazing, too, is you have these shafts that go into the pyramid. They go into the Queen's Chamber, the King's Chamber. They've been called air shafts, but, you know, that's highly doubtful, whatever they were used for.
Right.
To have constructed them like that, you have to cut... These things weren't drilled into the pyramid.
No, they were constructed in...
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of stones that were cut just right so that this shaft lined up perfectly and the edges are smooth and you don't see the transition from one brick to another, really. I mean, it's that tightly fit. And yet these things go hundreds of feet into the pyramid.
That's right.
Of course, what's even more strange is now the recent discovery that at the end of these shafts they found little bronze doors.
Well, they call it a door, but you have to... We have to consider that the shaft is only about 8 inches square, so a door for a rat, perhaps, or a gerbil, or a mouse, but certainly not a door in the conventional sense. It's actually just a stone slab that where the shaft terminates, and there are two copper, or they assume copper, fittings that come through the stone block. Very interesting subject and a very interesting study that I mentioned, I write about in my book about what the purpose of those shafts actually was, and also some predictions about what would be found on the backside of them if they actually had a good look behind the stone block. And in 2002, I believe it was, they drilled through that and inserted a camera behind one of them and found that there was a small space behind it. The camera, though, was at the end of an endoscope, and it actually sent back a distorted image. It was because of the lensing on the end. It didn't get a really good look all around the opening, and it really focused the light only in the center rather than it filling the opening. But I made a prediction that because of the theory that I had developed and wrote about in the Giza power plant, that there would be some features found on the opposite side or the other side of that one stone block. And from my preliminary look at it, it looks like it may be bearing out, or it may have some, there may be some value to it. There are four of those shafts those coming from the so-called Queen's Chamber actually terminate, and both of them terminate. They don't go to the outside. So, you know, that was the...
Oh, they don't?
No, they don't. And the interesting thing about these small shafts, they were discovered in 1874 by a gentleman by the name of Wainman Dixon, who was a early explorer or traveler, and he was just studying inside the Queen's Chamber, and he thought that he detected a crack in the wall, and he pushed a rod through this crack. And he just kept going. So he chiseled around and basically removed the limestone, the wall, the limestone, and discovered the shaft. So
wow.
It was a huge mystery up until 1993, when a German robotic engineer sent a small robot up the shaft to explore it, and he discovered the door, which was named after him, actually, Gantenbrink's door, they called it, though even Gantenbrink doesn't think it's a door. So that's the history of the Queen's Chamber shafts.
Now, I thought the doors were discovered from sending something from outside down, but you're saying it was from inside up that they found the doors?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the shaft, the end of the shaft, was actually, it was explored from the chamber itself. They sent the robot in through the opening in the chamber, and then it climbed up, and they found that it terminated at this limestone block with the copper chisels at the end of it.
That's interesting. So this was definitely deliberate. It wasn't as though they...
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this was a deliberate design by the builders. And, you know, the really curious thing is that it was designed to be closed off on both ends. So...
That's what I'm saying. It was... Right. This wasn't intended as a, you know, as they have claimed, an air vent.
No.
They deliberately terminated it with those copper... Wow, this is even more bizarre. So obviously, folks, we're dealing with something here beyond the standard explanation. Stick with us. We'll be right back.
In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places. Fellow Americans, we are living in this time of Earth's history. People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes four books and several DVDs for your information. It discusses America in prophecy, the Antichrist, tyrants and wars, secret societies, the New World Order, and much more. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, Packet F, 888-211-1715. Again, 888-211-1715.
Attention, this is an RBN Financial News Bulletin. Have you ever wanted to get out of debt, maybe even make some of your debts disappear completely? If so, and you're an RBN listener, there is a very real chance you will be able to do it. Here is why. A new manual has just been published that reveals how you can get out of debt in 90 minutes without any loans or bankruptcy whatsoever. The insider secrets revealed allow you to get out of debt so fast and so completely that it makes some people feel like they're stealing, but they're not stealing. The secrets taught in the manual are 100% legal and 100% ethical. It's just that bankers, debt collectors, and credit card companies don't want you to know about these loopholes. Don't be a prisoner of debt. Go to outin90.com. That's www.outin90.com or call 877-327-0365. RBN listeners receive a free DVD with purchase.
People who use Cartavite know about the pollutants in our body and want them out. For over 5 years, Cartavite has proven itself time-tested. Here's Dr. Mattson, a naturopathic doctor's thoughts on Cartavite.
In our mind, there isn't such a great big mystery to disease anymore. This basic tenet of yeast in the gut and metals in the liver covers at least 70-80% of the diseases that we see. When we do our program, you know, herbal formulas like Cartavite, and you see someone who could barely walk up a hill now going for regular jogs, few months later, we know we're doing something right. It's a well-thought-out formula. I mean, the idea of it working on yeast and metals both at the same time and liver function is dead on. You'll find, I think, that it'll work more than just on heart problems and circulation problems. It'll work on other problems as well.
For more information, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit our Cartavite link at rbnlive.com. That toll-free number again, 1-877-928-8822. 8822.
Hey, guys. Sorry about that. I just have to move a few things around here. I'd gotten cut off during the break. Skype is at it again. So I wasn't sure. I thought we were going to the phone, but I saw I was getting called on Skype, so we're going to chance it again. Okay, guys, I guess the guest had gotten cut off too, guys. Sorry about that. A little technical difficulty. Give us just a moment here, and we'll be bringing them back up. It's just one of those things, one of those blessings of modern technology that you got to deal with. But anyway, interesting stuff, though, guys. I hadn't realized that I thought that the robots that were sent down the shaft, I thought it was from outside. Now to discover that the robot was sent upward from the Queen's Chamber, this just changes everything. This makes it even more interesting and more obvious that they terminated these shafts deliberately and that they had nothing to do with, the theory has been, they intended it to be just like in the King's Chamber, air shafts. Well, that's obviously not the case. They designed these deliberately. They intended for them to terminate with these copper plates, or doors, as they're called, at the end of them. So anyways, let's go back. We get Chris back on the line. Sorry about that, Chris. We had a little technical difficulty there.
That's okay. I'm here.
Yeah. So you said you do have a theory as to what you think they were for and what you think is beyond the copper plates or doors there. Would you share that with us? I'm curious what you got to say.
Well, one of the things that I... when I first started to study the Great Pyramid, it appeared to me that it looked like the schematics of a machine. And so I was, fascinated by it, obviously, and tried to actually determine if it was a machine, what kind of function did it serve. And then it struck me like a lightning bolt that, there was definitely energy involved in it. I know that there had been a lot of conversation about pyramid power and things of that nature, but it seemed to me that it wasn't necessarily just the shape of the pyramid. There had to have been something going on inside this structure because of all the anomalous features about it, and the features are quite remarkable. And in my mind, if you were going to actually explain something, you had to find an explanation for everything, not just one particular feature. Everything had to have an explanation within a all-encompassing theory.
Mainstream science likes to be narrow.
Exactly. The tomb theory is weak for one thing because the way they theorize, let me first explain to your listeners just exactly what is in there. I mean, there is a descending passage that goes down 26 degrees down to a subterranean chamber. It's about 350 feet long. There's an ascending passage. These are very narrow, cramped passageways. And they're about